Support for the Marketplace Money podcast provided by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, providing the financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Let's thrive on the web at thrivent.com.
Hi, I'm Tess Vicklund, and usually ignoring your finances can cause big problems, but sometimes...
The short answer is nothing.
That's Professor Jennifer Conrad with this week's Marketplace Money Inside Quote. She says there's one financial responsibility you can ignore. And the repercussions?
The short answer is nothing.
So what can you afford to blow off? Is it A, junk mail asking you to consolidate student loans? If you've done it once, you generally can't do it again. Or perhaps it's B, ATM fees. Some banks waive them if you open a high-end checking account. Or can you disregard C, corporate proxy voting? You know, the ballots you get when you own shares in a company? Oh, you don't know? Well, no skin off your back. The answer is coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is Marketplace Money. Voter turnout in the 2004 election cycle hit 64%, up from 60% in 2000. But when's the last time you actually bothered voting for the board of your mutual fund? I'm Tess Vigeland. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive on the web at thrivent.com/retirement.
If you've ever been on a long trip, you can probably relate to our reporter, Janet Babin. She just returned home to North Carolina after working 2 months at our studios here in Los Angeles, and she has a tip for all of us.
If you go away for a significant period, I would suggest having your mail forwarded or stopped, because I didn't. And when I got home, my mailbox was stuffed to the brim. I could barely get the thing open, let alone see what was inside.
Among the junk mail and bills were several urgent letters from her Fidelity Investments Index Fund. Janet picks up the story from there.
The Fidelity envelopes were printed in thick black lettering. Please open immediately! Exclamation point. At first, I panicked. Maybe my teeny tiny nest egg was in trouble. I opened up the letters, and inside were proxy cards for shareholders not attending the annual meeting in Boston. Oh, so the company just wants me to vote for the Board of Trustees. Let me see, there's 11 names on the back of the card, but I don't have a clue who these potential trustees are. And I've got a pile of unopened mail here. I asked around at work. My colleague Susan Davis just got a bunch of proxy cards, too. And unlike me, she knew just what to do with them.
I'm a working mother with two children, and I sort of feel like I can only contain so much information in my head and keep track of so much information. And those proxy cards, right in the trash.
But even Susan had second thoughts.
What happens if you don't fill them out? Does anybody know?
The short answer is nothing.
That's Professor Jennifer Conrad with the University of North Carolina Business School. She explains that proxies are a way for shareholders who don't attend the company meetings to vote their shares on whatever items happen to be on the agenda. Things like
the approval of the company's auditor, possibly issues related to executive compensation, sometimes issues related to big events like merger proposals.
Some of this stuff is more than routine housekeeping, so it could deeply affect the value of the stock. That's something I knew Roger Pyle would care about. He's a member of my local investment club. He's got individual shares in more than 50 companies. That's a lot of proxy statements, but he votes every one.
I vote on principle, and I feel like my few shares may sometime down the road make a difference.
Roger began to pay closer attention to the cards back in 2001, the same year a Texas-based energy powerhouse went bust.
You may remember the Enron debacle.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
And, you know, I had some investments in that company and lost it along with everybody else, and noticed that if I had looked harder, I may have sold the company sooner.
While small investors like us can't compete with pension funds and other large voting blocks, we're making inroads. Shareholder activism is up, especially against CEO compensation.
But when it comes to, say, voting for a corporate board, it seems like all I can do is rubber stamp the candidates pre-selected by Fidelity. I've got to be honest, there's not much incentive for me to vote. And obviously my fellow investors agree, because Fidelity had to postpone its shareholder meeting. Some say companies should make it more worth our while by letting us vote against board members who seem to be asleep at the switch. That's an idea backed by Kurt Schacht of the CFA Institute Center for Financial Market Integrity. He says that way,
the shareholder is in the position of voting for or against the director, and a director is required to get a majority of the votes in favor of their election in order to serve as a director.
The SEC is considering a proposal that would give larger shareholders more of a say. They'd be able to put their own picks for the corporate board on the ballot. Meanwhile, my Fidelity proxy statements? Still right on top of that huge pile of mail. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive on the web at thrivent.com/retirement. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org.
So Janet just told us about the confusion lots of folks feel when they're called upon to voice their opinion as investors. A big part of that confusion? All the gobbledygook they write in those proxy statements. And it's just some of the legalese that fills all kinds of government and business documents. Here's one example from the General Services Administration.
When a person, for his or her own convenience, travels by an indirect route or interrupts travel by a direct route, the extra expenses shall be borne by him or her.
Enough already! Well, this week a bill was introduced in Congress aimed at translating language like that into plain language. And we've brought in an expert to translate. Annetta Cheek, what does all that mean?
It seems to me what it says is that if you travel on government business, you have to go by the cheapest, most direct way. And if you don't go by the cheapest, most direct way, then you have to pay the difference.
All right. Well, that's exactly the kind of language I would expect from the co-chair of the Center for Plain Language. And thanks for coming in.
You're certainly welcome. I'm delighted to be here.
So what exactly does this new legislation hope to accomplish?
The legislation itself targets documents that go directly to the public that the public needs to deal with to get a service or benefit from the government. And that's a pretty broad set of documents.
So perhaps this would actually allow us to read through the IRS code and understand what we're supposed to pay?
Well, the forms anyway. This bill affects the executive branch. Of course, Congress never passes a law that affects what it does. That's for my next lifetime, is trying to get Congress to write clearly.
I got to tell you, financial documents are almost worse. How did they get so arcane and wordy?
Well, I'm afraid it was mostly the lawyers.
I'm shocked. Shocked.
Shocked and surprised, right? We do have a lot of lawyers who are strong advocates for plain language, but when a lawyer is working on a government document or a financial document, they want to be super, super sure that they've covered all of their bases. They're going to write these really long sentences just to make sure they cover everything. And what you end up with is something that nobody can understand.
Well, I guess my biggest problem with this is that, as you said, it really only affects the executive branch, not even all of government. And I got to tell you, I wish that this would happen in the private sector, because trying to read annual reports and anything that comes out of Wall Street is practically impossible.
Yes. And I know that the Securities and Exchange Commission is very dedicated to trying to clear that up. But, you know, it's a very entrenched culture. It's really part of the culture, the way we communicate. And another problem is that it's not easy to write clearly. First off, you have to think clearly, often a problem. And you see this finished product that looks so simple, but getting there is actually quite difficult. And when you've been in a bureaucratic system for so long, it's really difficult to step back and say, well, now, you know, how can I say that more simply? It causes a lot of people pain when you want them to take out their passive verbs and take out what we call noun sandwiches. It's just foreign to them because they've been writing in the bureaucracy so long.
Well, obviously being able to understand a document is kind of its own reward, but what else will consumers gain if more government agencies just decide they're going to use regular old Joe language?
Well, we're convinced that it will save everybody time and money. For example, filling out a form, people make fewer mistakes, and so they're more likely to get whatever it is they're filling out the form to ask for. So we're convinced that this just all around will give better customer service from business and from government.
Well, Annetta Cheek, thanks for keeping things plain and simple for us.
You're certainly welcome.
Annetta Cheek is the co-chair of the Center for Plain Language. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. It is November, so you know what that means. Get ready for every relative you've ever known coming over and grubbing on turkey. But for some, these types of family get-togethers can be uncomfortable because they owe a relative money. A new service claims to help manage those kinds of loans. It's called Virgin Money, and it's owned by Sir Richard Branson of Virgin Airlines and Virgin Records fame. I asked Kathy Kristoff of the Los Angeles Times for details.
Normally, these loans are very informal. And often, because they're so informal, they go sour. And they don't really want to talk to you at, you know, the Thanksgiving dinner. And so you end up having a problem with that loan. So this creates a formal way to do these loans. Of course, the downside is they charge you for that, right?
Right. So how does this service actually work? Does Virgin Money make any recommendations, for example, on what kind of interest rate you might want to have, at least in order to avoid problems with the IRS?
Well, they understand both the tax laws from the standpoint of what you can do without getting into trouble with kind of gift taxes. Because essentially, on a personal loan, if you do not charge a market rate of interest as determined by the IRS will consider it a gift. And so they actually know if you would be running afoul of that, and they'll tell you. And if you buy that particular service, they'll actually do the proper reporting so that you can be on the right side of the IRS all the time.
Would you want to use this if you're lending $100 to a friend, or are we talking maybe a little bigger than that?
To me, this makes sense if you're doing a fairly large loan and it's a type of loan that you would want some sort of tax reporting for. You know, for instance, if you're doing a mortgage loan, that's a level of sophistication that I think, you know, is probably worth paying for. And also because you're talking about a lot of money in that case.
In general, I would think it's easier to loan money to friends and family if you treat it like a business transaction.
In the right circumstances, this can be a win for both the borrower and the lender, because essentially you can give the borrower a better rate of interest than they could get someplace else. And as the lender, you could be getting a better return than somewhere else as well. But, you know, it's like anything else. Be thoughtful about who you're handling these transactions with, because otherwise you lose the money and the friend.
Kathy Kristoff is a personal finance columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tess.
Coming up, a credit freeze protects you from identity theft, but what happens if you can't unlock your report? Chris has the key, and everyone knows the benefits of an apple a day, but this is ridiculous.
I eat dozens every day. I hope they're good for me.
All right, a day in the work life of an apple farmer. It's all coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Viglund. It's been unseasonably warm here in the U.S. this fall, but reports are coming in of actual frost in the Northeast. That means it's finally starting to feel like holiday time, and it also signals the last few weeks of the apple harvest. On this week's A Day in the Work Life, we talk with a farmer and cider maker who has no problem keeping the doctor away.
Well, we start here with our apples, and we dump them out of these 13-bushel bins. This is called a hopper. Our elevator is going to take the apples toward the washer. I guess we can go in here now. I'm Stan Pratt. This is Happy Valley Orchard here in Middlebury, Vermont. My wife Mary and I own it together. There's a big 8-inch steel drum in here with sharp blades, and that spins around with this motor and makes a lot of noise. It grinds the apples up just like mush, like applesauce. When I grew up in the 60s, most families in our area for extra money would pick apples to pay their taxes. You probably couldn't pick enough apples now to pay your taxes, but in those days you could. And that's how I got interested in it, learned to work in the orchard. When you're a farm child, you grow up doing all those different things that are your parents try to tell you is fun, but it's actually hard work. Like anything in farming, Mother Nature has a lot to do with how our season is going to be, but you have to know how to prune the trees. Then when the apples get ready, you have to know when to pick certain varieties, and you can learn it fairly quickly. I'm not going to tell you you need to be a genius to do it, but maybe we take it for granted how much an orchard grower knows. If you've done it all your life, it seems quite simple. We make cider and have a pick-your-own orchard here. It's the best way to sell the apples. If people pay you to pick your apples, you don't have to pay someone else. And we've seen some things here that are kind of comical. Couples come through, and sometimes they get quite friendly if they think they're not being monitored or seen from a distance. As long as they don't get hurt, I try not to see a lot of things because I'm not good at the discipline thing. Our gross sales are between 180 and 200,000. The net profit is approximately 40,000, and I guess maybe I get paid around 20,000 a year. This is seasonal for me. At the end of the season, I work at a ice rink, so we're always doing extra things, you know, just to offset the fun of having the orchard. I love apples, so I have no problem just eating apples every day. I taste them to see how they're coming and what different, because we have so many varieties, I try them to see when they're good. I eat dozens every day. I hope they're good for me. If they aren't, I'm in trouble because I eat a lot of apples.
A Day in the Work Life was reported by Jane Lindholm. Anybody got an apple for me? You can buy it into previous installments of the series online, marketplace.org.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrive and Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive. On the web at thrivent.com/retirement. And by Reuters, delivering news and information that reaches over a billion people every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters.
A nightmarish reality brings us this week's Marketplace Money buzzword, Case-Shiller Index. The Case-Shiller Index looks at the value of existing single-family homes. And this being the scariest time of year, the latest figures were downright ghoulish. Home prices in 20 U.S. metro areas slumped in August by the most in at least 6 years, and 8 cities reported the largest price declines ever. The figures scare the pants off economists who were hoping they'd get a treat, a sweeter outlook for the housing market. But turns out the economy might be in for one costly trick.
Got a box full of letters.
Well, as you may have figured out, this is the time where we stop asking the personal finance questions and start providing some definitive answers. And with me is our own financial editor, Chris Farrell. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Tess.
Before we start, do take down our website address. It's marketplace.org. Click on the contact button there. Or if you like, give us a call. We're at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. And we spell that M-O-N-Y. All right, our first call is from Justin, and he's in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Justin.
Please enjoy the music while your party is reached.
Oh, my.
Hello, this is Justin.
Hi, Justin. It's Tess and Chris from Marketplace Money.
How's it going?
So what was that music we were just listening to?
Well, that was my ringer that eventually I should get changed. However, I haven't decided to grow up yet to get that changed yet. So for now, that would be the Black Eyed Peas.
All right. Well, that was a little entertainment for us today. Tell us about yourself. What do you do there in Jacksonville?
Well, I'm in the Navy. I'm an AT, which means I work on avionics.
So you must work on a carrier then?
I do not. The P-3 Orion is a very big, old plane that cannot land on a carrier.
Oh!
I'm one of those lucky sailors that will never actually sail.
So what's your question for Chris today?
Well, my big question is I've been in the Navy for almost 3 years, and I'm still trying to figure out the thrift savings plan, or the TSP as we call it.
The thrift savings plan is a retirement plan for the military, right?
Yes. And I'm trying to find some information on it, and you go online, and you find about 1,000 websites that you can pay them to tell you how to, you know, to give you some advice. And I try to go here, and either people don't really know what they're talking about, or are a little afraid to give me advice because they're afraid of me screwing up and then blaming them.
Here being somewhere on base?
Yes.
Isn't this something that they should have taught you in boot camp?
This is something they should have taught, and did teach me in boot camp, actually. Given the way that boot camp goes, you know, you're sleep deprived, you're studying for classes really hard and all that kind of stuff and getting ready for tests. And this was when they taught this class, this isn't testable material. So I took the chance to take a little nap with my eyes open, I guess would be the best.
Well, this is a lesson for anyone who ever takes a class about money. You need to keep your eyes open and pay attention. All right. Well, Chris, let's do a little review for Justin here and give a bit of military economics, military personal finance 101.
Here's the really good news. The Thrift Savings Plan is, I think, the best savings plan in the United States. Everybody should be able to participate in it. The reason is, this is the plan, by the way, Tess, that's also offered to federal employees. It's not just military. And you really have just 5 investment choices. And the main choices are all index funds. So in other words, you're going to do as well as the market. So one choice, Justin, is the Standard & Poor's 500, which is a major index. It matches that market. Another one is the Wilshire 4500. It matches the performance of 4,500 stocks. But here's also the really good news that can really cut through making a choice with the Thrift Savings Plan, which is they also offer 5 life cycle funds. So much in stocks, so much in bonds, and then it will adjust over time as I get older. So this can be a very good choice for people who, at least initially, aren't sure how much they want to put in stocks, how much they want to put in bonds, but they know they want to participate in this plan.
And that's something where it changes as you age. So perhaps you're a little bit more risky investments when you're younger, and then as you get older, right, you head more toward bonds and other safer investments.
That's right. And here's the really exciting news. And just as you can see, I didn't sleep during the class because I get excited about this stuff. One of the things that I really like about this plan is that it has very, very low fees. So we're just going to use an example. It's a little bit unrealistic right now, but let's say you had $100,000. Guess how much he will pay in a fee on that investment a year? $30. Now, in a typical 401k, 403b, you're paying $1,000 a year. You know, I kind of like the odds that that thrift savings plan is going to do better over time than the typical 401k or other types of savings plans.
Well, Justin, it certainly sounds like you've got a great option there. So does that give you some idea of what you might want to do with your retirement plan?
I think so, yes.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it so much.
Bye-bye. Well, let's head to our next email. Thomas writes in from McLean, Virginia. And a few years ago, his wife asked the 3 major credit reporting agencies to freeze her credit report. And we've talked about this on the show before. You can call up these credit companies and say, I want you to freeze my credit and not give it out to anybody. Now she wants the reports unfrozen, but she's only managed to get one of them, TransUnion, to go ahead and do that for her. The others say that they require a PIN code. Thomas's wife swears she never got a PIN code. So is there anything that they can do at this point to unfreeze those other 2, Experian and Equifax?
This is actually a big problem that more and more people are running into. She did get the PIN number at some point, but there's a real problem of people losing them or forgetting them, or, you know, they put them in that safe place that they knew where. Ooh, now where did I put that? So this has become a definite problem. There's a little bit of a trick with TransUnion, but that's the one that's not giving her a problem. I'll just give you a little bit of a trick. It's going to cost you money, but they charge you for their credit monitoring service. Mm-hmm. Now, as part of that service, you can instantly lift a security freeze on their website.
And I think the other two companies have said that they will be doing that, but you can't do that yet.
That's right. They're moving in that direction. They're all going to move in that direction. So I would continue trying to find someone to talk to and using certified mail in order to try and unfreeze your credit report. And hopefully, in their instance, TransUnion is just enough if they are dealing with one particular circumstance or one particular borrowing, and then that's enough that can allow them to do the borrowing that they need to do.
If you're trying to thaw out a financial dilemma, but it's still hard as a rock, give us a call. We'll try to turn up the heat. Click on the contact button on our website. It's marketplace.org. Or give us a call. We're at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. All right, let's go to caller number two. Teresa is on the line from Orange, Massachusetts. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
How about those Red Sox?
Sorry, don't really watch them.
Oh, geez.
I know.
You're talking to a Red Sox fan.
I know. My students were all really excited about it, though.
Oh, well, at least we have that.
Yes.
Fair enough. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do there in Massachusetts?
Well, I'm a teacher at a homeschool co-op on a farm.
What do you teach?
I teach 7th and 8th grade. My kids are right here, right now.
Oh, can we get a collective hello from them?
Sure. Wait, 1 second.
Hello.
Okay.
Well, tell us what your question is for Chris today.
Well, my question is, I have good credit and a low income, and I am looking to buy land. I want to build a house, and when I look at the different loans, they are all for, you know, the first-time homeowner loans mm-hmm. are for people who want to buy a first-time home, and I can't afford a first-time home.
All right. Do you have money saved up already for this house?
Yeah, I got about $20,000 to put down, and the land I found is about $55,000.
So you're looking at possibly a $35,000 loan or so. And then, of course, you're going to need to build the house.
Right.
Okay. Well, Chris, what's her first step here?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, one would be typically to buy land and then to leave it aside when you decide you're going to build. It's typically about 25% down, and the term of the loan is about 15 years. At least that's most of what I'm aware of. If you have the land and then you can go get a construction-only loan or what we call a construction-to-permanent loan, which is that you take out a construction loan and then it automatically converts into a mortgage once the period of time is over with. The advantage of a construction to permanent loan is that it's less paperwork. You know, you deal with one lender. The disadvantage is you can't shop around once your house is finished. You're locked into that deal.
Do you need to have a general contractor?
Okay. You yourself can be the general contractor. You're basically a manager. You're managing the paperwork. You're managing, you're checking on stuff. But you need to be working with licensed subcontractors so that when the local government comes and they inspect a home, you are to code as far as electricity goes and some of the other things.
Okay.
Chris, you mentioned this construction to permanent loan. Is that something that could be used as to buy the land and then also build on that land, or do those have to be two separate loans?
As I understand it, those are usually two separate loans.
So she'll need a separate loan to buy the rest of the land if she's already putting $20,000 down on a $55,000 parcel.
That's right. What you would do is shop around and be working with different lenders and come up with a package deal.
All right.
All right. Does that help you out?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Can we get a goodbye from your students?
You guys ready to say goodbye?
Oh, we love you guys, too.
We love you, too.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Have a good day.
Bye. Well, I think Chris, at this point, those are going to be the most financially savvy kids in the entire state of Massachusetts.
Yes.
All right. Well, if we can help you with a money problem, give us a call. We're at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. Or visit our website. We're at marketplace.org. Click on the contact button there. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. All right, let's reach into the email bag one more time. And Sarah wrote us from St. Paul, Minnesota. And her employer just announced the health savings account option for employees. And this is in response to some pretty drastic increases in their premiums. So they now have three choices. One is basic insurance with a high deductible that covers 80% of inpatient. The second is what's called a buy-up plan that has a high deductible but covers 100%. And the third is a health savings account. Sarah says that on paper, the health savings account seems like a great option, but she wonders if it's too good to be true. Who should consider this and who should stay away from this option? So let's go through those options and talk about which one might be best. So basic insurance with a high deductible covers 80% of inpatient. That's pretty good.
That's the classic health insurance option. And actually, it's still the option that most employees favor and makes the most sense.
Okay, well, the second one was something called a buy-up plan with a high deductible, but it covers 100% of your medical bills.
Now, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know the specifics of this plan, but let's just say it had a deductible of $10,000. But after that, once you have exhausted the deductible, you get 100% coverage.
Okay, and the third option here, this is something that we get a lot of questions about, which is the health savings account. Now, I know here at Marketplace, for the two of us, we have both the classic insurance option as well as a health savings account. So is that common where you would have both of those available?
It is increasingly common for employers to add a health savings account option. And just for quick definition, health savings account has a tax-free, tax-deferred savings account for your medical bills. Here's a couple things to consider. Does it have 100% coverage on things such as annual checkups, mammograms, child immunizations, that type of thing you want to be covered? Secondly, is your employer putting any money into the plan? The third thing is, how healthy are you? I mean, we're always talking odds here, but the health savings account is a more attractive option for a younger, healthy audience than it is for an audience that might have a ongoing disease like diabetes. Now, some of the plans that I've looked at, they actually deal with that situation. Others don't. So again, the devil is in the details when it comes to HSAs.
All right, Chris, good stuff. Unfortunately, those are all the questions we can take on this week's show. Leave your question for a future program on our voicemail. We're at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY, or visit our contact page on our website, marketplace.org. Hey, thanks, Chris, and we'll visit you again later in the show.
Well, thanks a lot.
Imagine paying 500% interest on a loan. That nightmare scenario is reality for some payday borrowers. Now banks are stepping in to offer a long-term solution using short-term loans. And a Bay Area family makes a pact to buy nothing new for an entire year. But at what cost?
When my daughter's invited to a birthday party, I always think, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to give this kid?
All that plus your letters. It's coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Viglund. For folks in this country who live paycheck to paycheck, sometimes the only way to make ends meet is by heading to a payday lender. These storefront operations have quickly grown into a $40 billion industry. But more often than not, payday loans come with triple-digit interest rates that trap borrowers in a spiral of debt. So the federal agency that insures bank deposits, the FDIC, is asking banks to provide some competition. From WCPN in Cleveland, Mari Saito reports.
When Jacqueline Oliver first tried payday loans, she loved how easy and convenient they were. She walked into a Cleveland payday lender with a pay stub from her county healthcare job and wrote a check for the amount she wanted to borrow, $300, plus the lender's $45 fee. The check was dated for 2 weeks later when her next paycheck would come in. But the lender gave her the cash up front. Soon, this 44-year-old single mom found herself in over her head.
If you borrow $300, you got to pay, you know, the fee plus the money back all at one time. And it, you know, it's kind of stressful, especially if you have to live for the next 2 weeks. You know, you're living paycheck to paycheck like I am. Probably a lot of other people, too.
These days, Oliver uses her credit union to borrow cash. On this Friday, members were lining up for grace loans. Customers at Cleveland's Faith Community United Credit Union can borrow up to $800 if they have direct deposit and put $10 in their savings account. Borrowers pay 17% APR, or annual percentage rate. That's much lower than the 391% that local payday lenders charge, and they can pay it back in several payments. CEO Rita Haynes says she wanted to provide her members a better short-term loan.
Grace is unmerited favor, so they didn't merit a loan based on their credit report. They got the loan because we trusted in them that they would pay us back. We've lost very few loans.
Faith Community United is one of a small but growing number of credit unions trying to give payday lenders some competition. Now the FDIC wants more banks to jump into the race. The FDIC's Bob Mooney says that's why the federal agency released guidelines earlier this summer for the type of payday loan they'd like banks to offer. Small one-month loans capped at a 36% annual percentage rate.
Payday loan customers have one thing in common. They all have a checking account at a bank. The FDIC is encouraging banks that it supervises to offer affordable small-dollar loans to these customers.
To entice banks, the FDIC is offering extra credit at exam time. Every year, banks have to show they are trying to meet the Federal Community Reinvestment Act by doing business in the rich and poor parts of their neighborhoods. Banks that offer small-dollar loans that follow the guidelines will get very favorable consideration in their annual reviews.
As a product that you might offer to a customer once and that customer would take just once, I don't see how anybody can make that product work.
That's Wayne Abernathy of the American Bankers Association. He says these loans wouldn't make any money. The cost of putting the loan together could even be more than the amount of interest and fees it would generate. He says banks would be more interested in short-term loans if they knew it would bring in potential new clients who might later move into other bank products.
If it is the beginning of a relationship that you're having with a customer, then maybe it can be part of a solution.
But critics say banks are just trying to protect service fees and products like overdraft protection. It's a 2 to 4 week loan that covers a customer's bounce check. The interest rates and fees can add up to triple-digit rates that rival payday lenders. In Jacqueline Oliver's case, she kept bouncing checks written to her payday lender and had to pay those bank fees, too.
You want to pay it back, and then sometimes you don't have it because something comes up, like maybe your light bill or something, and you need to pay it, and you're going to pay your bills first, so you may come up short on the other loan. That's pretty much how I got behind.
At first, Oliver was scared to turn to the credit union because she'd had such a bad experience with her last bank. When she did, her history didn't count.
When I borrowed from here, they didn't hold it against me because I had borrowed from the other place, and it helped me to pay off the other loan.
Cleveland's Faith Community United Credit Union has not made money off of their grace loan. Still, the credit union's CEO, Rita Haynes, says the loan is so popular that they haven't lost money. In Cleveland, I'm Mari Saito for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive. On the web at thrivent.com/retirement. And by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor through innovative grant-making and educational funding. Online at finrafoundation.org.
Last week, we introduced you to the Mullen family of Daly City, California. Angelique and Terry, their 5-year-old daughter Daphne, and toddler Henry. They're part of a group called The Compact. They vowed not to buy anything new for the entire year, with the exception of food and other necessities like kitty litter, soap, and underwear. We spoke with Angelique on January 3rd of this year, just as the family was starting The Compact. That interview aired a week ago. Today, our conversation from March 2nd. I asked Angelique how things were going 2 months into the experiment.
It's going very well. We haven't had any problems so far. Not too many challenges either. We've been okay. I might be having a little bit of withdrawal starting now, but...
What kind?
I think, what can we do? Maybe we'll go shopping. Oh, wait, what? We can't do that. We can't go shopping. So then I remember, and I don't even know what I would want to buy. So it's not like there's anything urgent we need or want.
Well, I think that would be a very familiar feeling to lots of people, whether they're doing what you're doing or not.
Yeah. We've bought a few things used. We decided that would be okay. It's been very easy.
Now, when you found yourself, you know, it sounds like perhaps boredom has sometimes prompted, you know, well, maybe we'll go shopping. What do you do instead?
I try to be creative instead. So if I feel the urge to shop, I decide maybe that's really an urge to create. I knit or sew, or we do an art project with my daughter or something along those lines. Or we take a walk or go outside.
What's the most tempted you've been?
I had a fantasy about buying a laptop the other day, but since we can't afford it anyway, it's not going to happen.
whether you were in the compact or not.
Yeah.
Are there any challenges that you see potentially coming up in the next couple of months?
No, the only challenge that's really, like, seems to be a consistent challenge are children's birthday parties. When my daughter's invited to a birthday party, you know, I always think, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to give this kid? What I've been doing is I've learned how to make dolls. So I've been making dolls, and we've been giving those away, and those seem to be really popular. It's just time consuming, and I have to think about it ahead of time and spend my time making it. So that has been a bit of a challenge. But so far, we've been okay. But it seems like once a month we are invited to one or two birthday parties. I mean, it gets a little excessive.
Is there anything that's come up that's surprised you? I know it's only been a couple of months, but...
You know, it's been a really good bonding experience for my husband and I. We really are a team when it comes to this, and it's been nice to know that he and I are on each other's side. I think it would be very hard to try it with a spouse that wasn't supportive. As far as anything that surprised me about myself, I mean, I find that I like waiting. I think one of the things that it's important to do that we don't do anymore in our society is we don't wait for things anymore. If you have the money, go ahead and, you know, we just buy it. I like waiting for things. And one of the great things that's happened is that I've noticed we have a lot more money in our bank account.
I was just going to ask you about that. Tell me what kind of difference you're noticing.
Well, it's very small, but so far, but I definitely notice we're not as strapped for cash. I find I don't have to wait to pay certain bills, you know, or little things like that were happening for a while, because we're not spending very much money. I mean, even with the things that we said we would, that are okay to do, like to buy used, we haven't bought that many things used. We haven't gone out to eat that much, you know, those kinds of things that we said were okay, like eating out, and we haven't done that very, very much, so... It's only been 2 months. I'm really curious to see what it's going to be like at the end of the year.
Next week, as part of American Public Media's Consumed special, we'll have a final visit with the Mullen family at their home in Daly City. A year without buying anything new hasn't been as easy as they thought it would be. Well, many of you do and did write to us. First up, Jim Foster of Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. He disagrees with Chris's condemnation of payday lenders a couple of weeks ago. Those lenders complain that an interest rate cap of 36% for military service members isn't fair.
At the terrible APR of 36%, the soldier will pay about $13.85 in interest charges for the loan. If responsible lenders aren't allowed to charge enough to make short-term loans, you'll simply drive that business to the back alley loan sharks.
But we received the most mail about my conversation with Los Angeles Times reporter David Lazarus. David was recently diagnosed with diabetes, and as part of his new routine, he included shopping at the Cadillac of grocery stores, Whole Foods. Elizabeth Wall from Albuquerque, New Mexico, says David doesn't have to shop there to get healthy produce.
Try your local grocery store. Try your local farmer's market. You'd be surprised that eating healthy is not as expensive, especially if you stop eating out.
So we asked David for his response.
Yeah, I went to the organic food store because at least I knew I was getting quality stuff inside my body. But that said, I've become a much better shopper. This is an ongoing process, and if it costs me a little money at the outset, so be it.
We'll bring David back for an update soon. Meanwhile, we welcome all your comments and compliments. Even complaints. What do you think of the show? What should we be covering or not? Go to marketplace.org and click on contact. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
White House officials say the president
and the experts say usually
the Heritage Foundation estimates
like it's going to be the best
they
quarter.
They decide
for
what they're going to charge.
That has some veterans nervous.
It's time once again for our economics editor, Chris Farrell, to help you sort out what's smart, what's stupid, and what's the straight story. And Chris, another example this week that Capitol Hill is the nation's epicenter of hyperbole. You agree with me there?
Absolutely.
Well, Democratic Congressman Charles Rangel, he is the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. He introduced a bill that he's calling the mother of all tax bills. And, of course, a number of Republicans immediately labeled it the mother of all tax hikes.
You know, to which I say, can't we just all get along? Look, the core of Rangel's proposal is getting rid of the dreaded AMT, the alternative minimum tax, which
ooh,
I know taps.
Spooky for Halloween.
Absolutely.
Ooh.
The AMT needs to be abolished, and both parties, they know it. So here's the straight story. Rangel's bill may have its flaws. So what? Rather than killing it, we need compromise. Let's have some genuine bipartisanship to get rid of the AMT now.
Oh, you're funny, my friend. Bipartisanship?
Hope springs eternal. I am an optimist.
Let's talk briefly, just for folks who still don't get it, and frankly, I'm sometimes one of them. What is the alternative minimum tax?
All right. You're an ordinary taxpayer. There's lots of deductions and exemptions, right, Tess?
Right.
The AMT, it's a parallel tax system. And what the parallel tax system does is it takes away most of those deductions and exemptions. You get a lower rate, 26% or 28%, but without those deductions, you end up paying more in taxes. So, who's vulnerable to the alternative minimum tax?
Me.
You. Okay. Anyone takes a large number of personal exemptions, like you have a lot of kids.
Oh, that's not me.
But you're in California, which is a high-tax state.
Yep.
A lot of people who are subject to the AMT are in California and New York, these high-tax states. And then the really big hit is anybody who has stock options. And if you're not careful when you exercise those stock options, you can fall right into the AMT trap.
And the original point of this was?
155 wealthy taxpayers, among America's wealthiest citizens, did not pay taxes. And this mm-hmm. was found out in the late 1960s. So in 1969, there was bipartisan. There used to be a bipartisan world, Tess. It really was. 1969, there was bipartisan outrage. And we ended up with the alternative minimum tax. So to make sure that at least the wealthiest citizens would pay some tax. But this year alone, it could hit 23 million taxpayers.
And that's because?
You haven't changed the tax law to adjust at all for inflation. And there have been changes in their ordinary income tax system, such as tax cuts, that basically what has happened is if you have an income between $100,000 and $500,000, and frankly, if you have incentive stock options, we're going to knock you down to about $75,000, you are at risk of falling under the alternative minimum tax.
So essentially, this is saying that if you make, what, $75,000, you're rich.
It's saying that we have this huge hole in our federal budget that we need to raise some money for. And we acknowledge that the AMT is a terrible, terrible tax law. There is nobody that really defends the AMT. But we can't figure out how to get rid of it without busting the budget one more time. And so Charles Rangel has come up with a proposal that gets rid of it.
How likely is it at this point that we're ever going to get a permanent fix to this? Are we ever going to stop talking about the AMT?
I believe that we will stop talking about the AMT because it keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's like the blob that keeps absorbing more and more people. So, yes, I do believe that something will happen. However, you know, in my nostalgic moments, I think back to about 20 years ago when Dan Roskinkowski, who was chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, just like Charlie Rangel is today, and he gave a speech saying we need tax reform. And Treasury Secretary Baker was so enthused. Oh, this is bipartisanship. He sent over an audio recording of this song. So I say, maybe we could use a little more music on Capitol Hill, or at least the sentiment of bipartisanship.
All right. The straight story from our man, Chris Farrell. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Tess.
And if the term AMT wasn't enough to give you a post-Halloween fright, these words might. Open enrollment. Yes, tis the season when most large companies give their workers a chance to switch healthcare plans. We spoke with Tom Billett for tips on navigating those choices. He's with the corporate consultancy Watson Wyatt. Tip number one, keep an open mind.
Well, one of the general things I advise people is don't choose the same plan that they chose last year just because it worked for them then. They may have a new set of choices, and very likely the cost of those choices changes as well.
One option that may be new for some workers this year is something called an HSA, Health Savings Account. That's where you get a cheap insurance plan, then put aside pre-tax dollars to pay for high deductibles. Tom says HSAs might be the right choice for healthy young workers or for the wealthy. As for the rest of us?
Well, it's always important to understand, you know, what your health status is and those of your family, and how much you spend on health care in a given year. Typically, companies or your insurance carrier would have that information if you want to look at it.
And finally, Tom's a big booster of flex spending plans, even though if you don't use them, you lose them for that benefit year.
But I always encourage people to think about what they might spend on health care during the year and then be conservative. Only put in half. Depending on what tax bracket you're in, every dollar that goes into that account that you spend on medical care is a 40% savings.
And savings can only be good for your health. And that's Marketplace Money for this week. Next time, get ready for some trash talk.
Because it's so cheap, it just feeds into this vicious cycle of buy, throw away, buy, throw away.
We're finding a way to consume what shouldn't have ever been put in the trash in the first place.
Our school district is hurting. It's like $1.5 million in debt. We need this landfill.
Join us as Marketplace Money and six other American public media programs present a special week-long series called Consumed. Our program is produced by John Haas with Rico Galliano, Stephen Hoffman, and James Richter. Special thanks this week to Renita Jablonski and Patty Hirsch. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Remember, talk to your own expert before you make any big money decisions. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
Want to hear something on Marketplace Money again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and information on transcripts, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just point your browser to marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive. On the web at thrivent.com/retirement.
American Public Media.